This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone in Cairo. We slip past the guards at Cairo University to check out an ongoing sit-in at the School of Mass Communications, now in full swing with placards and banners and a fair measure of flirting. The students demand Dean Sami Abdel Aziz, a revolution-denying, rigged election-defending Mubarak crony, must go.
The principles of press, or the principles of media in general that we learn, are in complete contradiction with the opinions of the dean. We are taught to have credibility, not to mislead public opinion, and to observe neutrality in presenting issues. And the dean defends ferociously and with all his power a regime that corrupted and destroyed the country.
A fight breaks out when some young men are ejected after trying to crash the sit-in. Actually, no one is sitting. These are stressful times. Many revolutions everywhere as the institutions built to support the old regime are breached. Students here learn solid principles of journalism, but to use them, they've been obliged to go abroad to Al Jazeera or the BBC. And that might seem strange, given that the most storied newspaper in the region, a 136-year-old monument to journalism, is so nearby. We hail a cab. Al-Ahram is Egypt's most widely circulated daily newspaper, though not necessarily the most read. State-owned, the government appoints the top editors and controls the presses. Riddled with deadwood and internal corruption, the paper's nadir probably was reached in September 2010 when a blogger revealed that it had doctored a photo of Middle East leaders walking with President Obama so that Mubarak appeared to be leading the group instead of Obama, when in fact the Egyptian leader was bringing up the rear. Osama Saraya, Al-Ahram's editor-in-chief, called the altered photo expressionist, depicting Mubarak's leadership role in the peace process. We've arrived and run into Khalid Daoud, back after 9 years as an American correspondent. He's returning, he says, like many other foreign-based Egyptian journalists, to help build democracy at home. So why all those years in the U.S.? It was a strategy to avoid conflict. For instance, he says he didn't have to report, as home-based reporters did, on mythical Mubarak supporters in the street during the revolution. Away from the mothership, you're less likely to confront moral dilemmas.
You simply use your own tactics, like many Egyptian journalists, of avoiding the stories that will put you in a bad position or make your name look bad. And if worse comes to worse, they force you to write one story, you can file it without having your byline on it.
How did you feel when you saw that infamous photograph of Mubarak walking in front of the national delegation rather than behind?
I was embarrassed to be an Egyptian journalist when I saw that picture. And of course, I wasn't happy because everybody was making fun of me. But more important, I just told myself that if a government newspaper wants to satisfy the president in such a cheap way, this is definitely a regime that's not going to stay for long.
What's your beat here?
I cover regional affairs, and I also cover the local political scene.
What's going to happen the first time you push against the red line?
My article won't get published.
Upstairs, we are greeted by Al-Ahram's new editor-in-chief, replacing the old expressionist one, Abdel Azim Hamid, a longtime Al-Ahram hand who briefly left for an independent paper and then returned. An unscientific poll of reporters tells us that they can't quite read him yet. I certainly couldn't. He says Al-Ahram's comeback will be a piece of cake.
So Al-Ahram is well established in the Egyptian consciousness. It is part of our culture, so it is easy for Al-Ahram to regain the confidence of the readers.
But we've talked to people who have worked at Al-Ahram, people who have read Al-Ahram, and the fact is, it's not going to be easy. So be honest with me. What's the big challenge? What is the first thing that you need to do?
I think it is not now to replace the chief editor. He was responsible for everything gone wrong in Al-Ahram. Of course, the change of the regime liberated all of my colleagues. It is a week now. 1 week. So it is hard to answer every question, to know everything.
So what is your goal for this week, if you had one? And what would be your main goal for next week?
my main goal for this week is to change the people of the central desk of the newsroom. The desk who is in charge of all the pages of the newspaper and should be headed by the chief editor himself.
So, those people have to go. Is that going to happen this week?
Not all of them, of course.
And next week?
Next week, to pick up some new face to supervise the editorial section.
So, this week, get rid of people. Next week, replace them.
I hope so.
And the week after that?
Oh, it is enough. It is a lot of questions now. I think it is enough now. I think. I'm so sorry.
Okay, thank you. He threw us out of his office. So we picked up with enterprising business reporter Saba Hamamu, lately suspended for investigating corruption within Al-Ahram and then reinstated after the revolution. She sees a future for press freedom at Al-Ahram, inshallah.
This is kind of transformational period. The army shouldn't be in charge in a few months from now. We should have, parliament election and presidential election. So the army won't be there forever. And I would love if we can have this chance to, objectively report whatever happening in army or anywhere else. But to be honest, I'm not, thinking this is what gonna be happen.
Because patriotism, because of a sense that it would be destabilizing, or because it would be very much discouraged by the editors, or why not?
I don't think the editors will take this risk, because we are owned by the government. We are not independent. So, and the decision for appointing editors right this second is going to the sole power in the country. My opinion, my personal opinion, they won't take this risk.
Why not go to an independent paper here rather than to the paper that was the mouthpiece of the regime?
Because we want this place to bring, as Tahrir people brought Egypt back to the world, as, to the place it deserves, as the country that everybody looking at this moment. Why don't we try to bring Al-Ahram back to Egypt as, the most... In my opinion, it's been the most credible and most prestigious newspaper in the region. It's the oldest in the newspaper, and it's one of the most important 10 newspapers worldwide. So why don't we give it a try and do our best? Let's do that. If we failed, خلاص, we failed. I will go to another place, or I'll quit. I'll do anything else.
History is against her, the laws are against her, and for now the political establishment led by the military certainly is against her. Last Sunday, a military tribunal convicted 26-year-old Michael Nabil Sanad of insulting the army by reporting military abuses on his blog. He was sentenced to 3 years in prison, the first trial of a blogger since the military took over in February. Young bloggers are on the front line in the information war, and Mona Saif, a 25-year-old grad student in cancer research, is one of its field marshals, having used social media to keep thousands connected to events in Tahrir Square and now in Libya, Bahrain, Yemen. I guess you could call her a Twitter node. It was late, and she'd just left the lab when we met in a cafe called Bon Appetit, just down the street from Tahrir Square. What's a nice girl like you messed up in a revolution like this?
I don't know. Everyone I know is involved in this revolution, nice girls or not very nice. So just to tell you what revolutions could do to you. There's this young actor, his name is Esir Yassin, and among my generation, he's one of the most handsome young actors. And when I started working on military trials of civilians, I was working for one case in particular at the beginning for a guy called Amr al-Bihiri, because I was a witness to the army beating him up. So a friend of mine who works in filmmaking told me he's going to contact his friends and do like a small film to say that they are against military trials of civilians. And so he contacted Esir, and they did the video, and it was really good. And my friend called me, and he's like, okay, one of the channels of State TV called Esir Yassin, and they want to have an interview with him about Amr al-Bihiri's case. And since he doesn't know much about it, he has to sit with you to get more info about it. And I started laughing. And I was like, yes, revolution got me everything I want. Mubarak out. And Esir Yassin calling me on the phone.
Can you remember the first thing you ever posted online?
Back in 2006, I wrote a very personal post about how I've been following the blogs and how suddenly I want to be part of this space and see what it does to me and, sort of explore it. only a month after I started blogging, we had a big incident of mass sexual harassment for girls in downtown. And most of the girls I knew who had blogs, we suddenly decided very spontaneously to use our blogs as a space to share this experience, to share how it was being a girl in Egypt and how you sort of go through sexual harassment experiences every day. And suddenly there was this whole campaign against sexual harassment. Girls who usually wouldn't have dared to write about this suddenly gained support by the idea that others are doing the same. And it was the first time for me to be part of a social campaign that uses online tools and that comes out to one particular incident that triggers it and makes it much bigger.
Did you have any contact with mainstream media, or were you just working along a parallel path?
Mainstream media had contact with us. They used to seek us out, and even this happened in Tahrir. It didn't need effort on our part to try and reach out for mainstream media. Once you got the word out on the alternative media and social networks, either mainstream media picks it up and follows you to get updates, or even if mainstream media were reluctant to do that, eventually the buzz in the blog sphere and in the social media pressures them to talk about it. When we had the referendum, it was a vicious battle online. So in that sense, social media is really being used, and really being used much more than anything else, because we don't have real spaces in which these kind of debates usually take place.
What is your focus now?
Military trials of civilians. Since the army has taken control, we have thousands of civilians who have been tried before military court. The trial itself does not guarantee justice. And our mainstream media will not approach the subject. We have a couple of cases that the army have declared they are going to review it and retry them again after they were sentenced. All this has been done using social media. Social media will always be the first channel we use to approach subjects that mainstream media or the regime is reluctant to. And it seems that people in power are understanding this. For example, the army's main method of communication with the people is through Facebook. They have an official Facebook page. When they want to declare a statement, it is first announced on Facebook, not in main state media, not in newspapers. First thing they announce it is a statement on Facebook. So even those in power understand that now the way to the people is through social media.
Where do you get most of your news?
My main news source is Twitter now, whatever the issue is. And by time you acquire a list of people that you know who are really credible, and so you trust what news they are sending your way, which is like you do with mainstream media. And even when revolution started in Libya, I sent out to the people I trust on Twitter asking for sources in Libya, and eventually I learned and I gathered my own group of tweets from Libya to follow their news. The same thing happened for Bahrain and everything.
So you've created your own list of essentially news aggregators, because a lot of them will send you links to mainstream journalism. It isn't all just citizen journalists, right?
It isn't at all. It's pointers. It gives you an indication of what is in the list of hot topics. It gives you an indication of which are the best things to read. It sort of works as a filter and an aggregator at the same time.
Is there any Egyptian media right now that you trust?
Some and some. In the past 2 months, I've been completely absorbed in the issue of military trials and military violations. It made me realize more and more it takes a lot of guts to approach this subject. And I see this with a lot of people online, but I didn't see it with a lot of the independent newspapers. It made me sort of review my assessment of each paper I've been following or reading.
How they deal with the military is kind of a litmus test for you?
Yes, absolutely. How much they are willing to take risk for, you know, the greater good of human rights and protecting those who do not have people to protect them or not. So,
your media consumption seems to begin and end online.
I think my generation, definitely for them, their main space is the online one. But I also see that most of the people of my generation are still aware of the importance of traditional journalism and news coverage, and they are trying to move from the online form of it and invade the traditional methods. I would give you an example on that. a group of young people from Tahrir Square, right after Mubarak stepped down, they started an informal underground newspaper called El Gornal. They distributed online, but they printed. Their last issue had a huge coverage on military violations. The first issue, they printed 10,000 copies. This last issue, they printed 25,000, and they are trying to push for more.
Why?
It gives you access to a different audience. It gives you different access. And because even for me, I still like to hold something in my hand and read it, and it's not a bad thing. So it's not as if we are disposing with one means and then moving to another. We are pushing to change the other traditional forms to fit our expectations.
Are you working in your field?
Yes, I am. My work in particular is on BRCA1 gene, which is one of the genes connected with breast cancer incidence, and I'm investigating the mutation pattern in Egyptian patients.
You're working full-time at that?
Yes, absolutely.
And you're working full-time, really, as an activist?
I guess so. Both are very consuming, time and energy and emotions. And I'm only starting to get the handle of doing both at the same time and juggling between my activism and my work.
A lot of people say the problem with citizen journalism, leaving aside whether it's accurate or it's well-researched, is that it's not professional in the narrow definition that you aren't paid. And if you aren't paid, then you can't entirely devote yourself, and that's why you need a professional journalism class of people.
Paid or not does not define you being professional or not. I'm practically not paid in my research, and yet I'm doing it, and it's my real job. For the citizen journalism, I think this is why the actual product, for me, seems more professional, because what pushes people to do it is not to earn their money, but because they are fully committed to this particular cause that they are working on. And for me, I started working in military trials because fate had it that I was personally involved as someone was getting beaten up by the army and then falsely accused. And so I felt really personally about it, and I'm working really hard. I'm not sure if I was actually paid to do this job, if I would have worked as hard as I am doing now.
Do you think neutrality is important to producing good journalism?
No, absolutely not. I hate it when people push neutrality against me when we are talking about obvious violations. Whenever I saw the term neutrality, it was always to justify not covering the brutality of police or regimes or whoever in power.
What about the problem of accuracy?
I always find it funny when people ask about that, because we have printed newspapers that are complete rubbish, and they publish lies all the time. So use the same methods of judging and assessing any news source, whether they are professional journalists or citizen journalists. Nothing is given. People of my generation, because of all the what we have experienced, they are less likely to believe anything coming out of an official, for example, and they would always check first online or with their own personal networks that they have developed to check the facts. It's not as if we've never had rumors before spread, and now that we have social media, there are rumors spread. It's just another space where you have to use the same mechanisms you used to use in the real world, but adapt them to this new virtual world.